Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. Let's see. Today on the show, we got Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. He's our only guest. We will do the fight song roundup in the next segment where we will honor those football teams that deserve to be honored for their performance over the weekend. And we will we'll blow up someone else. And we'll talk about, listen, there's a million things today to talk about. Grizzlies Media Day, Jeffrey. The 24th Grizzlies Media Day, 24th in Memphis, which is really pretty remarkable.
I can't believe it's already here.
I can't believe it's already here. I'm ready for it to be here. I know there's the football overlap, and interest will pick up or be more focused Christmas and beyond. But how long has it been since we had meaningful Grizzlies games?
I mean, realistically,
you know,
I guess you can make the argument when Ja returned.
I think it was still meaningful because then that was certainly meaningful. And then we thought, oh, you know what? They're going to make a run for it. So whenever Ja went out for his injury for last year after the return, that's when games stopped being meaningful. It's been a long time since we have meaningful Grizzlies games. So it's nice to be able to have the Grizzlies back talking about them with the prospect of a big bounce-back season. Although, this was after we went off the air Friday, we got the news about Vince Williams.
Yep.
Having already gotten the news about Gigi Jackson, and all of a sudden, a wing rotation that was
crowded,
that required you to unburden yourself of Zaire Williams and his salary, partly for his salary, but also partly Zaire Williams. Where's he going to play? All of a sudden, Jeffy, if you look at who's going to play the two and the three, who are your wings? You got Marcus Smart. You got Desmond Bane.
I mean, I think that's where the road to, that's what those are going to be. I think what
you got Luke Kennard.
I think what Friday established is that the starting lineup, and this is probably where it was heading anyway, it's going to be Ja.
Well,
Des,
that's true, but
Marcus.
I mean beyond that, as wings, what's the rest of your rotation?
I mean, I think at this point it's Kennard, Luke, and Laravia to start,
and it's Laravia, and whether.
It seems likely to me Scotty's going to be the
backup.
Whether
you get Santi some minutes there,
yeah.
You know, all of a sudden you're incredibly thin. And it also does. What it does is it means before you wondered if Scottie Pippen was going to be the backup point guard because you needed to steal. You needed to find some minutes for all these wings to play.
Yep.
And so we'll get some minutes for Dez and get some minutes for Marcus Smart and get some ones for Vince Williams playing point guard. Well, that challenge went out the window. So it does. It is certainly not what you like to see. It did take a little steam out of it still. 24th Grizzlies Media Day in Memphis, which is pretty astonishing given that when they came here, there was, of course, the refrain that they'll be gone within 5 years. And now it's been... It's kind of amazing. I mean, sort of by definition, Jeffrey, if you are in your young 20s, you cannot remember a time without the Grizzlies in
yep.
town. So, and given everything, honestly, given what's happening in the University of Memphis, and we'll talk more about that, they really are. They're the closest to the big time that there is. They are the big time. They are the big time. A nice new mural for Ja Morant. Do you like the mural?
Yeah. Thought it looked great.
So anyway, we got Grizzlies Media Day, 24th Grizzlies Media Day in Memphis, the return of Ja, Jaren, Dez, and all the rest. We'll talk to Chris Harrington about that. We also have a doubleheader, Jeffrey, in baseball, a very meaningful doubleheader.
Yes.
And the Mets and Braves go at it in Atlanta. Now, all they each have to do is win one game. If they split, then they're both into the wild card. If one of them loses two, then the Diamondbacks will be in.
Right.
So, and it does raise this question. If you win the first one, what are you going to do in the second one? Are you going to try to win that one, or are you going to start resting up?
I mean, I think it largely depends on, like, where are you pitching-wise.
Well, so, for example, the Braves have... Because Chris Sale has had a few ticks off the old fastball was last start, I think. So they've been resting him up, right?
Right.
So they're not pitching him in game one. If they lose game one, they will pitch him in game two. But if they win game one, they won't. They'll save him for the wild card.
I definitely think that's what I would do.
100%. Yeah. So, but that's fascinating. So we have that added drama going on. We have everything that happened in the world of college football. We had a demoralizing NFL weekend that I don't want to talk about. I'll be honest. I'd rather not talk about it, if that's okay. We might just skip the NFL this week. No, we got a doubleheader tonight. Monday Night Football doubleheader. It is, in fact, a day of doubleheaders. You got Titans in Miami.
A rematch of a fun Monday night game from last year, at least a fun fourth quarter.
And then Seattle-Detroit, which should be interesting.
Yes. Right?
Titans in Miami, less interesting. Tyler Huntley's getting the start.
At least Skylar Thompson's not. Unfortunately, Will Levis.
So we got that to talk about. We got all the college football. Very, very, very busy day. I did think I'd start. We may talk more about the Grizzlies in this segment. We'll start talking about it more with Chris.
I don't think you'll mind me saying this, but so the other interesting intrigue for the doubleheader, Chris Sale is four behind in the strikeout lead.
Oh.
So if he didn't pitch.
I see. Right.
Like that could impact who leads the league in strikeouts.
All right. We'll start with a little college football. And I confess, Jeffrey, I did not go to the Memphis game Saturday. I stayed home. And although I do not have the capacity to have multiple TVs in a room, I can barely turn on one. I do have the capacity in my I'm sophisticated now. I can watch TV on one screen and watch on my phone or the laptop on the other.
We have to start somewhere.
So you got to start somewhere. So I was watching Alabama, Georgia, and I was watching the Memphis Tigers. And what occurred to me, and I lament saying this, they're two totally different sports.
Yeah.
And it always was a gap. Like there always was a gap. But the gap is growing larger and larger and larger. And however you measure it, whether it's size of the crowd, enthusiasm, athletes, whatever else, the gap is just, I mean, I don't know how, it was crazy. On the one hand, you had this epic, epic, unforgettable college basketball game with
football
game with, thank you, with high, incredibly high level players making unbelievable plays. And on the other hand, it was just kind of drab, honestly. Like it was incredibly drab. It was, and I go back to, I think, and maybe I'm wrong, and I don't, you know me, I like to walk on the sunny side of the street, but I do wonder if one of the reasons that we were angry for the last 2 weeks at each other and at the situation and everything else, it became highly polarized. I just think there's some of a degree of just raging at the situation here.
Oh, totally, I agree.
You know, it's not Scott. It's not whatever. It's not whoever's on either side of it. It's raging at the situation and you saw it played out. Now, again, every Memphis game isn't going to be that drab, and every SEC game isn't going to be that thrilling. But, my God, the contrast Saturday, it was like watching the NFL versus the Showboats.
I mean, honestly, it's more times than not, it's like watching a high-level NFL game versus watching, you know, a mediocre college game.
So, to take them each in turn... On the bright side, also Memphis is a week off. Ryan Silverfield's talking at the Touchdown Club tonight, so you can go hear him there if you wish. Tigers win 24-7 over MTSU, and again, I watched all of it. They were 26.5-point favorites, and it was uninspired. This is a MTSU team that gave up 52 points to Ole Miss, Ole Miss, by the way, may not be the offensive juggernaut that we imagined it to be.
Certainly didn't look at Saturday.
52 points to Ole Miss, 49 points to Western Kentucky, and 45 points to Duke. And Memphis scores 24, and no touchdown pass for the first time ever from Seth Hennigan. Kobe Miner with a huge hit that forced a fumble, set up a critical touchdown. Elijah Herring back. That was good to see. He would have been useful against Navy. Honestly, he was all over the place. And listen, they did some good things. They held MTSU to 29 yards rushing on 25 attempts. That was good. Mario Anderson had 118 yards rushing himself and caught another six balls for 43 yards. And they got the win. Defense was good. Offense was not. Offense was okay. It just hasn't been the Seth Hennigan year we had hoped for, you know, so far had not been. And the other problem, though, with Memphis is, if you look around, whether it's the conference race or the national race, if we still think that's relevant, in the conference race, you got Navy destroying UAB. Blake Horvath, by the way, two more 70-plus yard touchdowns.
Yeah. I mean, he does make Navy a more formidable foe.
100%.
Like you watch him like, oh,
that
that's
offense and him in that offense makes them 100% more formidable. So that it puts it doesn't take any of the sting out of the loss to Navy, but it adds some perspective to the loss to Navy. Blake Horvath with two more touchdowns of 70 or more yards. And so you got Navy rolling, and Navy would have to lose twice for you to catch Navy. And Army, as we've said, they beat Temple last Thursday, and both of those teams are 3-0 in the ACC. And as we've said now a million times, Army doesn't play Tulane, doesn't play Memphis, doesn't play South Florida. I think that's right. I think they don't play any of those three, and so. So it's going to be an uphill struggle to get into the AAC championship game.
I mean, maybe, but
there's game. People lose games,
correct? And like what we've seen is
you call up Navy schedule though. Tell me the two losses they're going to have. Tell me the two losses.
Always the problem with service academies is sometimes you don't like they. Sometimes they get out athleted.
And Army, you know, we shall see. And then nationally,
I think Navy is more real than Army is. But to your point,
who does Army play?
Army's schedule. So here's Army's schedule: at Tulsa, and Tulsa is some kind of bad. UAB at home, East Carolina at home, Air Force. It's non-conference game.
Non-conference, so it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's a loss.
At North Texas, Notre Dame
could be at North Texas. That could be a loss. Notre Dame doesn't matter.
Correct.
Obviously,
UTSA at home. And then the non-conference Navy game, which could be after the championship.
The way it would
game.
Work is you would have the championship game. If it's Army and Navy, you'd have the championship game between Army and Navy, and the next week they play the Army-Navy game.
Correct. And then with Navy, they have at Air Force this week.
We need two losses there, and this one doesn't count.
This doesn't count towards the conference standing.
Yep.
Charlotte at home.
Mm-hmm.
Notre Dame.
Doesn't count, obviously, for conference standings.
At Rice.
Mm-hmm.
At South Florida.
Okay, they lose that one. Maybe, although, man, South Florida looked bad.
Tulane.
Tulane. So Tulane looked great.
Yeah, and you can wind up in the situation where, okay, yes, maybe Navy has the head-to-head against Memphis, but let's say Tulane beats Navy, Memphis beats Tulane. Well, then another key stat is going to be, I presume, when you start to get to tiebreakers, overall record. And Navy's going to have a much tougher.
Yes, they're going to have a tougher overall record. You got to have two losses.
Right.
Tulane really good in beating USF 45-10. Darian Mensah sensational. 18 of 22, 326 yards, three touchdowns. He is really good. And then if you look nationally, Here's what happened nationally. James Madison, now mind you, 63-7 over Ball State, but that's a pretty formidable number to put up. And then of course, Boise State beats Washington State.
Boise's the threat, in my opinion.
Boise is the threat. Now they got to play UNLV, and correct. They could play them again in the championship game. And UNLV plugged in a new quarterback and did just fine. But Genty's unbelievable. Like that dude, it's like when D'Angelo was here. It feels
exactly.
Like, you know, it feels like
you watch him, you go, he doesn't belong in that league.
259 yards, 4 touchdowns.
Whatever his NIL retention fee was, worth it.
Absolutely worth it. For September, averaging 211.3 yards.
That's it?
And 13 touchdowns. Not a game, 13 touchdowns. That's overall, Jeffrey. That's not, it only feels like 13 touchdowns a game. So it's kind of formidable, but always darkest before the dawn, Jeffrey.
I mean,
I just made that up.
Yeah, I mean, no, someone should put that into like movies. That's an amazing line.
Clever. Yep. Yep, so there you go. Tigers did get the win. That was good. They got the week off. Then they have South Florida. 24-7 over MTSU. In the meantime, flipping over to the other channel. Holy crap.
I don't know how many games that one game had. It felt like 3, at least. You had the jaw-dropping, oh my God, Alabama is about to just run them out of the
4
building.
4 touchdowns in their first 4 possessions.
And it looked just everything was easy.
Easy.
Like you no, knew like Georgia like, had no chance of
you're
stopping
like,
them.
Kalen DeBoer is a genius.
Yes.
And Kirby's a moron.
Well, I mean, honestly, like, I started thinking, I was like, why didn't I take Alabama? Because Kalen DeBoer, to me, like, dollar store off-brand Kirby is Dan Lanning. And Kalen DeBoer's team's just always lined up and beat them. And I'm sitting there during this, I'm like, what was I thinking? This is dumb. Like, just eat the loss, whatever. And then, weirdly, I kind of found myself at the end of the game feeling okay about Georgia. Yes, the last...
Oh, I think Georgia should feel fine.
But it's like, Georgia did what Alabama used to do to other teams, which is Alabama would play like crap, and then as the game would go on, their talent would overwhelm you, and they'd kind of get back, and then they'd win the game. Now, the key was they didn't finish the job.
It's funny. In a conference championship game, so neutral field, what's the line?
Probably Georgia minus 2.5.
Georgia minus 2.5.
Yeah, because you got to remember, they're not going to overreact big time on this.
Well, we'll talk more about that one when we get to the fight song roundup. But it was sensational. And the problem is, and by the way, I lament this as a you know, kid who grew up in Buffalo who now lives in Memphis. I am wired to love the underdog, and I am wired to love cities that other people don't seem to appreciate appropriately. And yet, if I go back to when the president of the University of Memphis told me, and this wasn't some great revelation, but he said, what TV wants is the 40 best teams in the country, or maybe he said 60, playing each other.
Yeah.
They don't want them playing other schools. They want them playing each other. This was shortly after Bill Hargrave was hired. I met with him, and he said, that's what we're going to have, because that's what people want to see. They want to see a great program playing another great program, and that's certainly what television wants to put on in front of your eyeballs. And so it just feels like that's where we're getting, Jeffrey. You know, it feels like, I mean, it feels like a version of the NFL.
Yes, because what do TV executives know?
Right.
The NFL. Like,
the NFL.
Like, that's that. One of my big complaints about this whole experience that we're going through is that it's largely being handled by television executives.
Well, that's the thing. Why the hell do we let television executives decide who plays who and tradition and conference realignments and how far kids should travel and all that stuff?
Everybody's chasing the dollar.
It's literally because they're chasing the check.
But the thing that's interesting to me is while TV executives have some say in the NFL, the NFL largely controls their television product more so than any other league.
What's interesting, by the way, though, is that, correct me if I'm wrong, I came away from college football once again like gobsmacked by how great it was, mostly because of that game. But honestly, the Ole Miss game, which we'll get to too, was compelling, right?
Like, sure.
And again, I'm feeling particularly sour about the NFL today for reasons that have nothing to do with most of you people who aren't Buffalo Bills fans. But the NFL hasn't been very good. We had the opening Chiefs win.
Yeah.
That was thrilling. What's the last? What is the last great game? We had one rock fight after another yesterday. We had, the Jets Broncos was absolutely hideous. They didn't have a first down combined between them in the first quarter. Either one.
I don't
first
think they
down that they had was by penalty.
I think the first passing first down came like in the 2 minute drill with Aaron Rodgers.
I think that's right. I mean that was a total rock fight. Then you had Raiders Browns. How was that?
That was the true who wants to lose this one more, because both teams, the Raiders were begging the Browns to lose, please let us lose, and then the Browns like no, allow us. It's fourth down. We're not even going to get a throw off.
And then even the games that were games, like Minnesota Green Bay.
But like that was
kinda, wasn't a game for the longest time.
Yeah, like it was
a game for the last 5 minutes where you wondered.
Well, you looked up, you're like, that game's still going on? And you're like, oh, it's close.
It just, like, and again, the ratings, I'm sure, are immense every single week, no matter what. You do wonder if it's funny, everyone laughed when Mel Kiper said
the two high.
You got to eliminate the two high safeties. Mm-hmm. You know, Mel's always, he's always been ahead of the curve a lot of stuff, Jeffrey. He was ahead on the curve of a lot of stuff. Anyway, it was a fabulous week of college football. It was an indifferent week of.
But like to your point though, that is kind of the real struggle, and that's when you realize like, oh, in the end, we're going to be the problem. There's so much about college football in particular to just kind of feel gross about, and then you just have we now have the weekends where it's like, well, these games are kind of awesome.
That's the problem.
It's.
Are you really going to complain? I mean, well, again, but what that is as a TV viewer,
exactly,
the games are awesome. As a consumer of fans who care about the University of Memphis or Washington State or Oregon State, or honestly, like how much fun is Mississippi State now? Like how much really is that a whole lot of fun? Like fans of schools, I think are having less fun. The national consuming television audience, if you can just, because all you have to do is have a few good games,
yeah,
is more fun. But it's the grassroots football, less fun. All right. We're going to take a break, come back to the fight song roundup. Frame Corner Memphis is the place to go if you need something to be, guess what? Framed. That's it. Exactly right. 5035 Park Avenue. Walk on in and buy a frame. Any number of beautiful frames. Desktop frames, frames you can hang on the wall, all kinds of frames. But what they specialize in is custom framing. So if you have something that you really care deeply about, I've told you about the guy from Jonesboro who brought his grandfather's Arrowhead collection, or Dan Barron here at the station, formerly here at the station, who brought in a collection of fishing lures or like sports memorabilia, whatever you have, bring that into the Frame Corner. Lay it on the counter and say, please make this beautiful. Please make this something, a keepsake that I can hang on my wall and that will last forever and that I can hand down to my kids. And they will do that. It's the Frame Corner, framecornermemphis.com, 5035 Park Avenue. Back in a moment with the Fight Song Roundup, 92.9 FM ESPN. Back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do the Fight Song Roundup. Yeah, we already talked about this one. Alabama wins a classic, 41-34. Won 9 of the last 10 against Georgia. Kirby Smart is 1-6 against Alabama. Kalen DeBoer is 6-0 against Lincoln Riley, Dan Lanning, Steve Sarkisian, and Kirby Smart. That seems good, Jeffrey.
Especially when you consider those are the names that are going to be his generation.
Who's the star of the show, Ryan Williams or Jalen Milroe?
So I thought first half, Jalen Milroe was the star of the show. When it came time to how are you going to win this game when it felt like Georgia had all of the momentum and they were going to steal this one, then it became Williams.
Georgia scores to take the lead with 2:34 left. Stunned. Everyone's stunned. 67-yard TV. I mean, TD. Milrow throws it up. Ryan Williams with an unbelievable catch. A spin move. Runs down the... Another spin move.
Yeah, I didn't know what was more impressive, the catch by the sideline or the run after the catch, because both were incredible.
And then just even the speed, once he got the second pirouette, even the speed down the sideline, that dude is something else.
He's 17.
I never heard that.
Yeah, you didn't?
Never heard that he's 17. Never, did not. And by the way, Jeremiah Smith, who came in as the best freshman receiver, also awesome. Also awesome for Ohio State, just not being.
He had a one-handed grab crazy. That was like, oh my God.
Who do you feel better about? You know, they may play each other again, these two. Who do you feel better about at quarterback? Coming into the season, it was Carson Beck. That was a shaky performance, particularly first half Carson Beck. Ended up with 439 yards, but had those turnovers, four turnovers altogether. And Milrow under Kalen DeBoer,
yes.
Is...
To me, the biggest thing is for... I don't know if it's better for the program. I don't know if it's better for the school. I do think it's better for Jalen Milrow that Nick Saban retired, because you see with DeBoer, DeBoer's not trying to develop him into some read-the-whole-field guy. It's, let's scheme up what he can do. Let's put this guy in the best position to have success, and he has just unlocked him.
How do you feel about it? It is a little weird to have Saban clearly cheering for Alabama, you know, giving a high five in the press box. It wasn't a high five. It was a knuckle, you know, whatever.
A fist bump. Yeah.
Fist bump. And then commenting on the game.
I mean, what are we supposed to ignore it? Like,
no, you can't ignore it.
No, but like, my point is, like, are we supposed to act like he wasn't the Alabama coach in January?
No. The argument would be he's not supposed to be commenting on this game, but the truth of the matter is you want him because he brings insight to it, even more insight to it because it's Alabama.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So I got no problem with it. I got no problem with it. Absolutely magnificent performance. Who do you feel better about him?
Back to your question about Beck. It's difficult also with Beck to determine, like, I'm not convinced that one of his interceptions was on him. Like, I think they checked and the guy didn't get the check. And so it looks like it was a terrible decision, but like he was definitely seeing some ghosts early. Like they clearly
missed a bunch of throws early,
but as the game went on, he started to like really unlock. And I just, that last interception, man, give me some effort, eight, like knock the ball away. From Colby Young, like,
if you're picking in the top five or top 10 in next year's draft and you need a quarterback, are you feeling comfortable with either of them?
Not really.
That's the problem.
Like, and I don't like my thing with Quinn Ewers is like, I think Quinn has gotten better, but like, is someone that gets hurt every year in college, right, is he really just gonna have a healthy NFL career?
All right, what's next? Really, I. This is Kentucky's fight song, ladies and gentlemen. And give credit to Kentucky. Although they lost to South Carolina, so not too much credit.
Well, I do think, though, that's part of this game. I think part of the way that Ole Miss feels is like you saw the final score of the South Carolina game, and I'm not saying South Carolina didn't deserve to win the game. They clearly dominated up front. But that final score was a lot different than the actual game was. Like, South Carolina won with 250 yards of offense.
Right.
Like the game was a little weird. But I do think that clouds how everyone's feeling for Ole Miss.
Whereas, if you want to feel better, you just see what they did against Georgia, where the defense holds Georgia to 13 points.
And the difference was in the Georgia game, they didn't really go for it. And then on fourth and seven, they go for it. And boy, did they.
It's funny, because it was wildly overshadowed, as you would imagine, by the Alabama game. But those two fourth downs in the second half, one by Ole Miss.
I think both were fourth and seven as well.
Both were fourth and seven. Both were deep in their own territory. I think on the 38 for Ole Miss, I think it was, and on the 20, I think, for Kentucky. Both converted. Both, I'm like, why are they going for it? I'm like, with both of them, I'm like, why are they going to, why? A little less so with the The Kentucky one just because it was getting late.
Like game-wise, you understood what they were doing.
And then go with a deep shot? Like, that's your play?
I mean, honestly, I kind of thought it was probably their best shot, because to me it was like that was going to be your one-on-one. You have Barrion Brown. Like, I didn't really want Vandergriff throwing it over the middle.
Right. He did just enough. Vandergriff, 18 to 28, 243 yards, a touchdown. Jackson Dart, 18 to 27, 261 yards, and a touchdown. He was under siege all day. And the story here was really that Ole Miss, which came into the season with supposedly dramatically improved across both offensive and defensive line, was dominated on the line of scrimmage.
They were absolutely whipped on the offensive side of the ball. They got pushed around a little bit in the first half, but I thought in the second half that defense played well enough. Like, I know we're talking about the fourth down play, but
it was the offensive line.
And a key play for me was Ole Miss was in the middle of kind of driving the ball in the second half. Like, they came out in the second half and moved the football pretty good, and they run a little RPO and they kind of fire it late to Trey Harris, and Trey fumbles it. Now, it wasn't like Kentucky returned that for a touchdown, but that took points off the board.
Trey Harris is a very good player.
He's extremely good.
Honest.
But I mean, I think
even in that mess, 1176 yards, touchdown. I think you're right. That
I think
was
they had
a
two
play.
Other targets to sorry, they had they targeted receivers four other times other than Trey Harris.
But here's the problem. And I mean, really, I meant to blow up. When I started thinking about who we're going to celebrate, I meant to blow up Ole Miss, because this is just devastating. What this is to Ole Miss, this is the Navy loss for Memphis.
Yeah.
This is the same thing. You come in, both programs, thinking for different reasons, this is the year. For the Memphis Tigers, Seth Hennigan's back. They can go to the playoff for the first time ever. They're in many ways one of the favorites to go to the playoff. This is going to be the year. Now, could come down to a tough game against Tulane. And what do? They freaking lose to Navy. A Navy team that's actually better than we imagined.
Yeah.
Right? But, like, give Navy credit.
Absolutely.
But still, you're like, oh, hell. Not only do you have the L, what it does for Memphis, it takes away any room for error going forward. And it may in and of itself eliminate them, but it certainly takes away. Now you absolutely can't lose any other games going forward.
You could lose Georgia.
Now let's no. I'm talking about Memphis.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the Memphis situation. Now take the same situation and apply it to Ole Miss. This is their year. Loaded up with NIL. Jackson Dart's returning.
They cashed in their chips.
They pushed them all in the center of the table for this year. Now. Got some tough games. You got that Georgia game on the schedule. Got LSU. There's some tough games. And then what do? They lose to Navy. And not to Navy. But same thing. They lose to Kentucky at home.
Yes.
You got to be out of your... And so you're like totally demoralized. And what it does, just like in Memphis's case, it absolutely cuts down on the room for error going forward. Plus the other thing does, it's not just the room for error. The Memphis loss to Navy and this loss to Ole Miss made you say, well, they're going to lose other games. That's what it made. If they lost this game,
right.
It's not just that they lost this game and there's no room for error. How good could they be? They're going to lose to Tulane. They're going to lose to LSU. It has you questioning everything.
Right.
Incredibly deflating. In the same way that Memphis fans felt a week ago after that Navy loss, it strikes me that's how Ole Miss fans must feel today.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much spot on. I mean, I think that this mattered too. That was Kentucky's third SEC game.
Well, that's, yeah.
And this is Ole Miss's first SEC game. And it was their first game against an opponent with an absolute pulse.
Yes, with a pulse. And so you blame scheduling?
Well, I get why they did it, because if you're going to be a portal-heavy team, you want to have time to gel. Like, I get it, but like to me, that was a huge part of this, because Ole Miss had zero game pressure all year. And all of a sudden, they get into a dogfight and really a type of game that they don't prefer. Like, they would rather be in the wild shootouts that we've kind of seen with LSU than this. And you got to also credit Kentucky. Like,
got to credit Kentucky.
They got the game exactly how they wanted it. Ole Miss goes 1 for 10 on third downs.
I was literally about to say that. Exactly right.
When it came down to like who made more plays, Kentucky made a couple more plays.
It's always darkest before the dawn.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad I invented that early because this is going to use it. You're going to use it many times now. All right, who's next? Now, some of you may be confused because this is the Virginia Tech fight song, but I am not buying it. I am not buying indisputable visual evidence. There was a Hail Mary. I do not know if it should have counted or not, but I know it was called a touchdown on the field, and I know it should only be overturned if there is indisputable visual evidence, and there is not indisputable visual evidence. So therefore, in solidarity with the Hokies, we are playing their fight song here on this Monday morning as they lose to Miami in a theft of a game, 38-34.
So I'm with you. Do I think, if you're like asking me,
I think it should have been called a touchdown on the field, probably.
To me, it's like, if I'm just watching the play, I think it's incomplete.
Right.
Do I know for certain? No.
I do not know.
But I also know that there was nothing I saw replay-wise that made me go, yeah, it's definitely incomplete. Like, I get if you're laying on a defender who's out of bounds, you're out of bounds. Like, I get that. But it's like, how clear was that?
Not clear.
And so what I think we'll do, because this is what we do in football, we go massively overreaction. I think they might come up with some mechanism of, we're just going to replay. They're gonna announce,
they're
like,
call it on the
ground. They're gonna like just like, you know, like in, we do in,
I see, yeah, you know what it can be. Here's the signal can be, you know, that little shrug guy emoji.
Yeah,
it can be that. You
yes.
do the little shrug thing, and then and along with a point to the yeah. to the sky.
Yeah, or the
shrug
motion, the motion
point.
Yeah, the
right.
motion offense signal.
Yeah, that one too. Anyway, yeah, this is in solidarity with Vineyard Check. That was BS. Next. Have we ever played this one before? Did you have to go find this
one?
No,
I had to get this one as well.
We have two new fight songs. The other one was new too, wasn't it?
The other one was definitely new.
So Matthew Sluka made a business decision and took his lack of NIL money and went home. UNLV not missing a beat. Plugs in their backup quarterback, who had only lost narrowly. Like, you do wonder if it had been if they had a stud quarterback.
It sounds like it was a split decision.
And it was kind of a split decision anyway. Probably makes it easier for Sluka to have him.
I think
walk
it also
away.
Made it easier for UNLV to be like, okay.
That's what I'm saying. For UNLV yeah. to say, yeah, we're not paying you. We got just as good an option here.
Right.
He runs for 119 yards, 13-16 through the air, 3 touchdowns, and they beat the hell out of Fresno State. 59-14.
To me, it's like if Ricky White would have gone into the coach's office and said,
yeah,
I'd like a little more money, they're like, okay,
we'll find
get everybody on the phone.
Yeah. Right.
You hang tight.
You know, Sluka made a business decision, and they made a business decision. So UNLV seems unfazed, undeterred by the departure of Matthew Sluka. All right, next. This one we've never played. This is East Tennessee, ladies and gentlemen. Now, you wonder why we play in East Tennessee.
Yes, I am too, because I couldn't even find the staff broadcast.
East Tennessee left for the game against the Citadel Friday. You recall what was happening Friday, do you?
I believe
not?
We had a hurricane.
Yeah, and it is, and we may just absolutely devastating what has happened in
the Carolinas.
In the Carolinas in particular. Where right now, there's still, 1,000 people unaccounted for. Now, largely, this happened in Maui after the fires.
Yep.
They're unaccounted for because
there's the power's down, the phones are down.
The phones
down.
Their relatives can't get in touch with them. But I think there are already 100 dead or something like that in Carolina. And absolutely devastating. There's no... Like, if you look at Asheville, the interstates, I-40, I-24, both totally out. It is an absolute calamity. Kind of amazing to think that a hurricane, hurricanes don't hit, Western Carolina,
right.
Jeffrey. can do that kind of damage, but absolutely devastating. So East Tennessee, left for this game thinking, let's beat the storm and get over to the Citadel. And very quickly, the road behind him is washed out, and then the road ahead of him is washed out. The bus is passing people standing on their roofs and stuff. They finally have to go to, they take shelter in a parking lot where people who were displaced by the storm are finding refuge. They're there for 12 hours. They have no phone service. They can't, like, their moms and dads and whatever else are calling their sons on the bus, and they can't get through. No one can get through to anyone. They get like 100 sandwiches from a grocery store that was, you know, what, hadn't sold them or whatever. So they finally found, of course, a Waffle House and ordered. By the way, they asked the Citadel if they could postpone the game to Sunday. And the Citadel, no. Because it was parents' weekend and they have things planned. So they go to the Citadel. They finally can move again. They make their way. They sleep in the bus.
Yeah.
They make their way there. They slept in the bus. And they make their way there and they win 34-17 over the Citadel.
21 fourth quarter points.
21 fourth. See, there's the coming strong in the fourth quarter.
Yes.
So we had to celebrate. We had to celebrate them as well. There were a bunch of others who we could celebrate, Jeffrey, including Colorado.
Yes.
Beating UCF.
They ran the football, Jeff.
Ran the football. Defense was good. Travis Hunter, ridiculous again.
That was another coin flip that we got beat on.
Another pick. Does the Heisman pose, 139 snaps, just crazy. 9 for 89, catching the ball. He is absolutely a magnificent football player. USC came back to beat Wisconsin. You had Ohio State rolling over Michigan State. Penn State beat Illinois, Jeffrey, 21-7. Did you see that? Penn State had 44 rushes for 239 yards, whereas they held Illinois to 34 yards on 32 rushes. They do have a kicker problem, though, Penn State. By the way, we didn't mention the kicking problem at Ole Miss. Obviously, the missed field goal to end it. As you pointed out, it looked like Lane was thinking of
going for it on fourth down. And I'm telling you, like, his numbers are not going to reflect it because they don't have a ton of high-pressure kicking situations.
But he's not a great high-pressure.
But when there's been game pressure, he has not been a solid kicker.
Penn State's kicker, 3 of 9 on field goals. We have a whole bunch of schools that should be celebrated. We should play a lot of fight songs. You've got Duke at 5-0, Rutgers at 4-0, and Indiana at 5-0. How about that? Indiana at 5-0, Rutgers at 4-0,
I believe the stat was the Duke's biggest comeback in the North Carolina basketball series is like 17 points.
They were down 20 to zip in the third year to North Carolina and came back and win under new coach Manny Diaz. Rutgers hasn't been 4-0 since 2012. That was when they were good in the Big East, I think it was. Remember that? And Kurt Cignetti at Indiana.
I don't think we had the Big East then.
Is that right? They beat Maryland, and that's the first five-game winning streak in 37 years. Now, they've played nobody. Maryland was obviously whatever. They really haven't. They've played kind of a cupcake schedule. But still, good for all of them. And then Notre Dame. We didn't play the second-best fight song in the land, but nice win over Louisville. Got started slowly, we'll just say, with the fumble on the kickoff. But Riley Leonard didn't turn the ball over. Still hasn't thrown for 200 yards, but didn't turn the ball over.
He hit a few passes. I thought this was a good win for Notre Dame because that's kind of a game that we've seen them lose where you jump out in front and then another team pushes the gas and they don't have the answer. But that defense just stood tall, and man, they made it so hard on Louisville.
All right, who are we going to blow up, Jeffrey? Oh, God. What is going to happen? Florida State is now 1-4. If you recall, way back when, Alabama was looking at two coaches, Mike Norvell and Kalen DeBoer, at the end. And Kalen DeBoer is doing Kalen DeBoer things, and Mike Norvell now 1-4. DJU, another three picks. Brock Glenn, Pride of Lausanne, comes in. Sadly, does not complete a pass, Jeffrey.
I mean, this is where I don't envy Mike.
Like, he doesn't have a quarterback.
Correct.
There's no answer.
Now,
that's his fault.
Right. He made the decision.
These are his quarterbacks.
Right. And he made the decision that he was the guy that wanted DJU. He was convinced that it would work in his offense, and it just clearly does not.
That's awful. I don't think Mike Norvell's a bad coach, but my God, it's a disaster.
I mean, you know, the obvious answer is just going to be staff changes.
42-16 over SMU. I mean, losing to SMU. By the way, in addition to, like, it also takes, we already knew that was a tarnished win, Memphis against Florida State. But my God, it looks that much worse now. Better than losing to Florida State, no, unquestionably. But there you go. That was sad to see. We could have blown up, Jeffrey, Purdue. Purdue fires their OC, Graham Harrell. They've scored a total of 38 points against Notre Dame, Oregon State, and Nebraska. So they make a change. But I also think we could fire. We could blow up Auburn, Jeffrey.
We always could.
Pretty much every week we could blow up Auburn. It sort of felt like Hugh Freeze was going to get a quarterback who did not turn the ball over, which is all he ever wanted, Jeffrey. What did he want? He wanted a quarterback that does not throw it to the other team.
Mm-hmm.
And Auburn is leading Oklahoma 21-6 when Peyton Thorne, 63-yard pick six.
Well, and it's like it was the perfect Peyton Thorne interception, because all they did was the same thing that works every time. Make it look like you're going to blitz everybody and have him drop out,
right.
And he's going to throw it right to the guys that are dropping. And that was exactly what happened.
So Auburn has now lost three home games to Power 5 teams already this season by an average of 16.3 points. So we could always blow up Auburn. Anything else you wanted to comment on from the world of college football?
Let's see.
I think we pretty much.
Utah. If Cam Rising isn't playing, the Big 12 is going to be nuts.
Well, I mean, right now you got.
I think Iowa State's.
You got Oklahoma State's 0-2.
Yeah, right. They got real structural problems.
And Colorado, which we had dismissed early, is tied for atop the.
So is Texas Tech.
What SEC teams are going to be in the playoff when the dust settles?
Georgia, Alabama, Texas, Tennessee. I think that's what I'm going.
Those four.
I think they get four.
All right.
Because the thing that I think that's going to – I think the Big 12 is going to be the one bid league. But the ACC, this is the other thing that's kind of interesting about that Florida State game. SMU does have a loss to BYU. First off, BYU is undefeated. And – they now have Clemson looking like Clemson, Miami looking like the team that everybody's chasing, but they have a path to get two in, and so if they get two in, I think the SEC only gets four in.
All right, we got Chris Harrington coming up next. It is Grizzlies Media Day, their 24th Media Day in Memphis. Obviously, we'll talk to him about that, about the most recent injury to Vince Williams, and the big trade over the weekend, that was a bombshell. Karl Anthony Towns to the Knicks. So we got a lot to talk to Chris about. We will do that next. Before then, I will tell you one of the great things. I tell you if you're selling your house to call Josh Heisa, and you should. 461-8147. 901-461-8147. But you just think about it. So you see right now, like a neighbor will put the sign in the yard, and it'll just stay there and stay there and stay there and stay there. And one reason Josh Heisa is different is he markets. Let's be honest. You hear me talking about him, right? That is itself evidence of the aggressive marketing that Josh Heisa does on all fronts. Yes, he markets his services because he believes he can help you sell your home. and he markets your home in the same aggressive fashion. So if you are selling your house, call Josh Hysaw, 901-461-8147. Flexible fees, no upfront costs, let you out of your contract at any time. It's Josh and his team at Keller Williams Realty. You can go to the website. Josh has 461-8147. When we return, Chris Harrington joins the show. We'll do that next, 92.9 FM ESPN.